Oceana's sports leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT presents Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat.
Booger, up and in! With 2 seconds left, Notre Dame leads!
Malpas again, backhands, he scores!
Down to the corner, Jablonski, three is good!
Andrew steps in, he's going to throw deep for T.Y., he's got it!
Flips to Jenkins, three for the win, it's good! Villanova wins it!
He tied, it is a touchdown! New England wins!
Adios! Cubs win their ninth in a row!
Miles Boykin is in the end zone! The Irish have come back!
Your hosts are Eric Hansen and Darren Pritchett.
Good evening, everyone. Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat on the air for this Monday, February the 19th of 2018. He's Eric Hansen, the Fighting Irish Football Insider for the South Bend Tribune. I'm WSBT Radio Sports Director Darren Pritchett. Thanks for joining us. It is 7 minutes after the top of the hour. 54 degrees. Wow. Only going to get better tomorrow from what we understand, at least for one day. It's going to be spring. Coming up on the program this evening, which is brought to you by Budweiser. Great times are waiting. Grab some Buds. Would you believe a Notre Dame starter may not play tonight due to injury? Tom Noy passed along some details a couple of hours ago on Twitter. We will tell you who may not be playing tonight as the Irish get set to take on the Miami Hurricanes at Purcell Pavilion, a game that you can hear on WSBT Radio tonight. Pre-game coverage at 6:40, and the game begins at 7 o'clock. We'll also look back at the Matt Farrell Show on Saturday in Chestnut Hill as the senior guard put up 37 points in helping Notre Dame to turn back Boston College. Also coming up later on this hour, Fighting Irish freshman tight end Cole Kmet made headlines over the weekend. He was not catching, but he was throwing. We'll tell you about that coming up in just a few moments. Also coming up later on, our My 5 question of the day. The 5 best wide receivers of the Brian Kelly era at Notre Dame. We'll see what Eric came up with. Next hour, more on Notre Dame and Miami. We'll have rapid fire. And, of course, we will wrap things up a little early due to Fighting Irish basketball taking on Miami. Let's just start with a couple of headlines, and we'll begin with the news that Tom Noy broke. Tom, of course, covers the Fighting Irish basketball team for the South Bend Tribune, columnist, does a little bit of everything. This is what he wrote on Twitter a couple of hours ago. Notre Dame guard Rex Pfluger will be a game-time decision tonight versus Miami with a lower back bruise suffered Saturday at Boston College. So the Irish could be without one of their top defenders. Also grabs some rebounds, hands out some assists, and from time to time you'll get some good offense out of Rex, although that part of his game has been inconsistent. But it could be a night without Rex Pfluger as the Irish get set to take on the Miami Hurricanes, who are 7-7 in the Atlantic Coast Conference. So we'll talk more about that coming up in just a second. Some baseball news. First off, congratulations to the Notre Dame baseball team. How about taking 2 out of 3 from 9th-ranked LSU? And you could argue they should have swept the Tigers. They were up 6-0 in the middle innings in Game 1. That lead evaporated, and they lost 7-6. But they came back and won the next two games. And Eric Gilgenbach, co-ACC Player of the Week, against LSU hit .385 with 3 homers and 9 RBI, including 2 long balls and 7 ribbies yesterday in the win down in Baton Rouge. So the Notre Dame baseball team, I would say, in many people's eyes, off to a surprising start. Picked last in their division, the ACC, and they beat one of the best programs in the country 2 out of 3.
Yeah, well, they certainly had the offense. Their pitching is going to be interesting because they lost 5 pitchers to the major league draft last year. And in the third game, they kind of went with a bullpen game where they threw a whole bunch of pitchers in there. But Cole Kmet just surprised me. He was so sharp in his college debut. He was played in the middle game on Saturday, and he ended up pitching 4 innings in relief.
You're giving away the next segment.
Okay. and we move on to further action due to time constraints.
I don't want you to give away the whole story. We'll get to that coming up in a couple of moments.
Well, I mean, 27 runs against a team that's ninth ranked in the country and also was in the College World Series last year. And we all know Paul Mainieri is one of the greats in college coaching.
So, good start for the Irish. Also, some news from Major League Baseball today. It looks like another one of Scott Boras's clients will sign a free agent deal. The report is over the weekend that the Padres and Eric Hosmer have come together on a deal. And now, according to John Heyman of Sports Rag, that J.D. Martinez and the Boston Red Sox are close on a deal. It's not final as of yet. This has been rumored for a long time. There appeared to be some hard feelings for some time, but now it looks like with spring training underway, the Red Sox and Martinez are close to coming together on a free agent deal. And Major League Baseball announced today no pitch clock to improve pace of play. So no pitch clock in 2018, but each team will be limited to 6 visits to the mound per 9 innings. A manager going out, pitching coach, a player leaving his position to go to the mound counts. So anytime, for example, Wilson Contreras makes one of his 22 visits to the mound in a game, that will stop once they get to a total of 6. Now, if the manager goes to the mound to change pitchers, that's not going to count, obviously. But if you are one of those players, like the shortstop grabs the rosin bag, that's going to count as a visit now. So they're going to really try to speed up the game in Major League Baseball with that rule. And finally, one other note to get to after being swept in a home-and-home by Michigan, the Irish hockey team no longer number one in the country. They're now number 3 in the USA Today USA Hockey Magazine poll and number 5 in the United States College Hockey Online poll. Notre Dame wraps up the regular season at home against Michigan State Friday at 7:35, then Saturday at 7:05 on our sister station, Z94.3 FM. So those are some of the headlines. And Eric, let's talk a little Irish basketball as we get our program officially started. We just passed along the news that Tom Noy broke earlier today. Rex Pfluger, game time decision with a lower back bruise suffered Saturday at Boston College. So if the Irish do not have Rex Pfluger, here we go again, searching for a fifth starter. I feel like that has been something we have talked about 22 million times over the last 2 months. It just seems like somebody goes down and then Mike has to go into the well and find somebody else to join the starting lineup. John Moody made the start against Boston College on Saturday, and of course, Matt Farrell kind of carried the show as he put together an amazing offensive performance with 37 points. So if Rex doesn't go, you lose that defender, you lose that guy that does a little bit of everything. I think this is probably a bigger loss, if it happens, than most people realize, because I think so many people focus on a player's ability by the number of points they score. A lot of people just look at the box score and how did he shoot? Three-point line, free throw line, field goals. And this is a guy that stuffs the stat sheet and taking on an athletic Miami team. This could be a bigger loss than I think a lot of people realize because he is that one guy you can count on defense and also chips in with rebounds and assists for this basketball team. So I'm actually very concerned about this new development that Tom passed along a couple of hours ago.
Yeah, and if he's not like really close to 100%, you wonder how effective he's going to be because his athleticism is everything to his game. You know, he's not just a shooter that can chuck it. He does so many things that requires that spectacular athletic ability that he has with defending and rebounding and things of that nature. So, yeah, I think Rex Pfluger would be a big loss.
And I really hate to bring this up because I don't have the facts. This is just an observation. We have just seen a couple of players try to come back from injury and then go down with a setback. We saw Matt Farrell have the ankle injury, came back, and then something happened, and he set out a couple of more games. DJ Harvey looked like, Eric, he was going to play last week and suffered a setback in practice on Friday and did not play against Boston College. I'm just worried about pushing the envelope, trying to get to the NCAA tournament. Are people trying to come back too quickly? And you got to say the same thing about Rex. He is important for the stretch drive. I know you have to win tonight before you worry about tomorrow. But I guess I just want to make sure Rex is not going to hurt himself more to put this team in a bigger bind in the coming week and a half, 2 weeks, when everything is going to be on the line for this team. And again, I'm not trying to point fingers. I'm just pointing out facts that a couple of guys have started to come back, and then there are setbacks, and you just don't want that to happen with Pfluger tonight. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I do know what you mean, and it does.
Maybe it's coincidence.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, it's hard not to ask those questions, because I know when Notre Dame had all the injuries in football in 2015, there were a lot of questions about strength and conditioning, and that's the first place your mind goes, and you have to be really fair before you point the finger. And as it turned out, there were improvements that could be made in strength and conditioning, but this could be...
Well, I don't think it's strength and conditioning. I think it's coming back too soon.
Well, that's true, but that could be set... The table could be set by strength and conditioning.
Well,
they do have one of the best. But let me say this. There's now components that we see, like when David Ballou was here for Notre Dame, he was at the leading edge of sports science in terms of being able to predict injuries mm-hmm. before they happened. And I know that I'm not saying that that's the reason. I just think people are going to look at that and ask questions about that as well. And same with the women's team. Mm-hmm. With four season-ending ACLs, people are going to say, why are these all happening? Can it all be coincidence? And maybe it is.
Well, in the game on Saturday, there was nothing wrong with Matt Farrell. What a tremendous performance. 12 of 17 from the field, 10 of 12 from the three-point line, scoring 37 points. And Eric, watching that game, I don't think I have ever seen a player with a more unselfish 37-point performance. And I say that because there were not any forced shots as he went 9 for his first 9 from the three-point line. He did not throw up one of those heat checks. You know, when you're feeling it, sometimes you force a shot. And honestly, at some point I was kind of thinking, I kind of hope he does a heat check because he is so hot right now. And he didn't. And look what happened coming out the second half. He had that huge first half and the first couple of possessions. He makes beautiful passes to set up teammates for easy buckets. It just was a 37-point performance that was in rhythm of the offense. He did not force it. He still handed out 7 assists. I just thought that was a beautifully played game of basketball by Matt Farrell. Again, a lot of times when you score 37, you're going one-on-one, you're taking the game into your own hands, and you're forcing the action. Eric, I just felt like he was shooting in rhythm. Mm-hmm. He was taking good shots, and he was still distributing the basketball to teammates. I just thought that was one of the more impressive offensive performances in the last few years when you consider he took all of those shots in rhythm of the offense and never once, in my opinion, did a heat check, which normally happens a couple of times when a guy's feeling it like that.
And played every one of the 40 minutes, too.
Just awesome.
And Jerome Robinson only had 29 points the game. He shot well, though. I mean, he was 11 of 15 from the field and 5 of 8 from 3. No wonder the teams were in the 20s with rebounds. Nobody was missing.
There was only 3 fouls in the first half. Notre Dame, their starting lineup did not have a foul in the first half. I can never remember anything like that happening. I think Austin Torres had both fouls that Notre Dame had at halftime, and I think BC only had 1 foul in the first half. And Robinson, yeah, minus 17 difference from his 46-point performance at Purcell Pavilion against the Irish to 29 at home, and it almost felt like an accomplishment. With Farrell playing so well, everybody sort of took a back seat, but TJ Gibbs hit 6 of 10 from the field, 2 of 4 from 3. He could have had a bigger game had it not been from Farrell hitting all those shots. He had 15 points. Gebbins, 6 of 8. He had a lot of breakdown defensive layup and dunks in that game. BC, for some reason, didn't come out overly interested in playing defense on Saturday. And even Jogo had a nice game off the bench, Eric. We were kind of wondering, would he be the guy, would be the odd man out when DJ Harvey came back? Well, Harvey obviously got dinged up on Friday, so that opened the door for Jogo again, and he came through 3 of 3 from the field and 9 points. And the Irish shot 63% from the field in Chestnut Hill and 14 of 23 from the three-point line. They shot 60% from trifecta land. All of a sudden, the Irish offense kind of looks like itself again over the last few games, outside of the way they closed the game off at North Carolina on Monday, and now they take on Miami tonight. Well, of course, the Notre Dame-Boston College game was on WSBT Radio Saturday, and in the post game, analyst Zach Hillsland caught up with Fighting Irish head coach Mike Bray.
Big time road win against the Eagles. And what can you say about Matt Farrell's first half performance? Have you ever seen anything like that?
It's one of the great displays in our basketball history. It really is. I mean, to get us jump-started like that. But he has been feeling healthier and feeling better, and I think he's in a great offensive rhythm. But he sure made us believe today on the road.
And not only Matt, but you had Rex and TJ knocked down a three early. How important was it for you to get off to a good start tonight?
Anytime we're on the road, if you can get off to a good offensive start, it helps you feel good. At first meeting, a timeout. I think we had 11 or 12 points. So I felt we were going to score in the 80s, and we were very efficient offensively. I thought our defense was fabulous, especially in the first half. We really defended them.
Second half, Rex goes down on that tough drive. BC mixes up some defenses with the 1-3-1, is switching man-to-man. How were you able to weather that storm?
Well, the zone, kind of the 1-3-1 bothered us. It really did. But I can't say enough about Nick Jogo coming in. And really, this was the first game where he really looked like an ACC guard. And I hope we can build on it.
You guys are now 6-8 in the league, have a chance to go to 7-8 on Monday. What are you looking for against Miami?
Well, we talked about trying to get 2 on this weekend. We've never gone 2-0 on a Saturday, Monday. If we can get Miami on Monday and get to 7-8 in this league, if I squint, I'll be able to see the NCAA tournament bubble.
Sounds good, Coach. Thanks.
Well, Mike has started to lay it on thick, apparently. I did not hear his post-game comments after the game against Boston College, but apparently he was begging for a trip to Dayton in his post-game comments. He wants to go to the first four. He wants to get into the NCAA tournament, so he's lobbying for a trip to Dayton to play in the first four. That gets you into the NCAA tournament.
Well, my sister lives in Dayton. Maybe he wants to go visit her and Malik Zaire. Who knows?
God, that's an interesting building. It's
yeah,
like
it
a U-shaped roof.
Yes.
Very
I've,
odd.
I've watched games in that building before.
Well, is there reason to get excited right now? Because Notre Dame is now 6-8 in the ACC. They have, after tonight, two very, very winnable games at Wake Forest and against Pittsburgh before that finale at Virginia. So should Irish fans get a little tingly right now thinking that maybe there is a path back to the NCAA tournament after they sort of got back the victory they gave away to Virginia Tech at home, winning at Boston College? Those two kind of balance each other out now. So in my mind, they're almost kind of back on track. I've got them beating Miami and beating Wake Forest and beating Pittsburgh and then losing to Virginia, then all of a sudden you're kind of right where you want to be.
Well, the Miami game is big for both teams. It's big for Miami, too.
They've lost three in a row.
Right. So,
are you getting that feeling?
Yeah, but they have the Miami game is a must because even though you're expected to win Wake Forest and Pittsburgh, and you better be careful that you don't get too overconfident on the road at Wake, but
Yeah.
Well, we can think that way, but
we
players
can think that
can't.
Way, sure.
Yeah, but players can't think that way. Then you say, okay, because you know you don't have a lot of high octane wins either down the stretch. But you get to the ACC tournament 9-9, and you'll be playing. If you get the single bye, then you'll be playing at some point a team seated higher than you. And maybe two or three. So, and then we'll see what they can do if they have Colson and DJ Harvey back. The thing is, when you reintegrate those guys, how smooth is that reentry for them? It's kind of neat that there's stuff on the line here, Darren, and that you're not playing for a home game at NIT.
Ugh.
But you got to beat Miami tonight. They've got to beat Miami.
Or you better win at Virginia.
Right, which I think you just better beat Miami then, because Virginia's, they're really good.
Yeah. Well, Hurricanes lost at home to Syracuse on Saturday, 62-55, so they lost three in a row. They lost at Boston College, home to Virginia, and then home to Syracuse. So the Irish have a chance to win again tonight, and then you've got two games coming up where you're going to be the favorite, and all of a sudden, you're at the nine-win mark. And no matter what happens against Virginia, you're at nine wins, and we'll see if Bonzi Colson comes back for the Pittsburgh game. And if he plays well, that really helps Notre Dame's NCAA tournament resume. Then just don't lose the first game of the ACC tournament. Don't throw away all the hard work down the stretch by losing the opening game of the ACC tournament and then really leaving themselves in a tough spot with the committee.
If you get to 9-9, you're moving up in the seeds in the tournament, too. Mm-hmm. There's so many teams bunched. Right now, Miami is 7-7. Syracuse is 7-7. If you break even with those two teams, if you have the same record, you got the tiebreaker over both of them, right? So all of a sudden you could get a lift. Florida State's 8-7 and ranked 25th of the country for some reason.
I continued when we talk about this with people on and off the air, what are Notre Dame's chances to make the NCAA tournament? Again, the last few years, think about how bad the bubble is. There are bad teams at the bubble. And if you're Notre Dame, and if you can go 9-9 of the ACC pretty much without Bonzi Colson, you get him back, it is hard for me to imagine if resumes are similar that you would not take a Notre Dame team getting Colson back over another team that had its team fully healthy throughout the year. To me, the injury could be a little bit of a boost as the committee tries to figure out which are the best 68 teams in the country. And with Bonzi Colson back, and if he plays okay, now if he looks like an unproductive player, then now that could work against Notre Dame. But if he comes back and looks good, I mean, if he puts up 13 points, 5-6 rebounds, I think it helps the Irish resume against some other teams that were fully healthy throughout the year. Again, the one thing that concerns me, have they beaten enough teams with over 500 victories? That's the one part of the resume that makes you a little nervous.
Well, now they have a victory over top 25 Florida State. And they did that without Harvey and Bonzi Colson. The ACC right now, in Joe Lunardi's latest projections, he has 10 ACC teams in the tournament out of 15 of them. In the last four in is Syracuse.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. See,
so you're right about
you
the bubble. The last four in, here's the bubble, Darren. Baylor, Texas,
bad.
St. Bonaventure, and Syracuse.
Syracuse is a tournament team. That's all I need to know.
And the first four out are UCLA, USC, Washington, and Nebraska.
That's why you should have hope.
Yeah.
If you're an Irish fan. I mean,
when you look at
Syracuse,
that bubble.
Is that Lunardi?
That's Lunardi.
Okay. Well, if he's got Syracuse in, Notre Dame fans should have that tingly feeling that maybe they could pull this off. You win tonight, you win the next two. You lose to Virginia, you're 9-9. You win a game of the ACC tournament, that might be enough. Syracuse? Come on. Come on. No way. No way. Now, I'm sure they're better from when we saw them January 6th, but it's hard to get that Notre Dame-Syracuse game out of your mind when you evaluate the Orange, right? I mean, that was an ugly performance by Syracuse. On their home floor.
You're right. But 10 ACC games, 10 ACC teams, but you're right about the bubble. That is not an impressive bubble.
And nowhere to be found now is Nebraska out of the Big Ten.
Well, they are the first four out.
Are they still in that? I can't believe they're that close.
Yeah, so they're on the backside of the bubble.
That loss to Illinois yesterday could be something that really is going to haunt them. They just don't have a lot of great wins. They played that weaker Big Ten schedule, so they got a lot of work to do, I think, in the Big Ten tournament. It is now 29 minutes after the top of the hour. Notre Dame beat Boston College 84-6 on Saturday, and now it's Miami tonight. Big game for both teams. The Irish 6-8 in the ACC. Miami 7-7. They have lost three consecutive games, so there might be a sense of urgency from the Hurricanes tonight at Purcell Pavilion. You can hear the ball game on WSBT Radio. Pregame at 6:40. Opening tip is at 7 o'clock. Coming up next, we'll talk about a Notre Dame football player shining on the baseball diamond. And also, we're going to play back an interview we had with Chip Long recently, the Fighting Irish offensive coordinator. That's still to come as SportsBeat continues on 96.1 FM, WSBT. 534 on your home of the Fighting Irish, 96.1 FM, WSBT. Eric Hansen, Darren Pritchett with you, Fighting Irish basketball. In 1 hour and 6 minutes, when Jack Nolan starts the pregame opening tip, 7 o'clock at Purcell Pavilion. I have not heard about tickets available for tonight's game. That's a great question. You might check out the Notre Dame website. Give Purcell Pavilion a call to find out ticket availability for tonight's matchup between the Fighting Irish and the Hurricanes. Next to last regular season home game for this Fighting Irish basketball squad. They will take on Wake Forest on the road Saturday at 3 o'clock here on WSBT Radio. Just a quick follow-up to something we mentioned in our opening. Now, John Morosi from the MLB Network and other services is reporting that J.D. Martinez and the Boston Red Sox have finalized that free agent contract. Reportedly, Martinez gets 5 years, $110 million. The contract is front-loaded prior to an opt-out. So there is an opt-out clause in that deal for Martinez. Martinez will turn 31 years old in August. And to me, great discipline shown by the National League, because this is a guy in a couple of years that is going to be a defensive liability. So at least with the Boston Red Sox, he can act as their designated hitter if and when that day comes. So Martinez gets around $21 million a year. And that's a classic big market team overspending to get their guy. Now, he had a huge year last year, and let's see if he can do it once again. But that is the Red Sox needing that slugger in the middle of their lineup, and they hope they found their guy in J.D. Martinez. But to me, not a National League player. I know his bat can play anywhere, but the glove does not.
I was looking at the tickets. There's just literally a handful available. They're all up in the upper part of the arena.
Okay.
And there's only one section where they're even any together. The rest are singles.
Okay. So that's tonight, Notre Dame and Miami. Some scattered tickets left for the matchup at Purcell Pavilion. Well, the Irish football team, they have a good group of tight ends to work with once again in 2018. We saw a little bit of freshman Cole Kmet on the field for the Fighting Irish football team, and we're probably going to see more of him in 2018. But he was a star over the weekend for the Fighting Irish baseball team as Mick Aoki used his freshman pitcher Saturday, 4 innings. He did not give up a run. He allowed just one hit. He walked 2 and struck out 3, and he picked up the 4-inning save for the Fighting Irish as they defeated LSU Saturday by a score of 10-5. And once again, the Irish were up 6-0 in game 1 Friday, lost 7-6, but then they won 10-5 and then 11-3 yesterday to take 2 out of 3 from the 9th-ranked LSU Tigers. I recall last year, Eric, you spent a lot of time passing along some high school pitching details about Cole Kmet as he was leading, practically he was leading his team to the state championship with the way that he was throwing the baseball, and it caught our attention the way he was dominating at the high school level, and was wondering what he might be able to do with the Irish baseball team. Well, if the first appearance is any sign of things to come, well, Mick Aoki has a pretty special right-hander to use some way. Oh, is he a left-hander?
He's a left-handed pitcher.
I didn't know that.
And a right-handed batter.
Okay.
So you were half right.
I saw the pictures of the bat in his right hand, so I just assumed he was a right-handed pitcher. So he's a lefty. So now Mick Aoki's got this very interesting weapon to figure out how to use this year. So as Mr. High School Baseball stat guy for Cole Kmet last year, are you surprised at all?
No. No, I'm not. But I was surprised that he went 4 innings. You know, I had exchanged emails with Megan Golden, who's the SID for baseball for Notre Dame. And she said, you know, that they were really impressed with him. He didn't have much time, Darren. I mean, it was 7 weeks ago he was throwing a pass against LSU in the LSU game in a trick play.
That's right.
So he's
throwing left-handed now.
Right. Yeah. So he hasn't had much time to get ready for baseball. They have big plans for Cole if Cole has big plans for them. This year, he would pitch primarily out of the bullpen. They see him as a future rotation guy and a position player. When I talked to his high school coach at St. Viator last spring slash summer, Mike Manna, when they were making their state championship run, Mike thought that Cole would be a better position player in college than he is a pitcher, even though he's an outstanding. Well, his, I don't have his final stats, but going into the state quarterfinal game, in 51 innings, he had an 87-18 strikeout-to-walk ratio. He had a 2.06 ERA, and it was sinking. I mean, he was dominant in the state series. That was a 15-loss team that came through the bracket and won a state title, the first in St. Viator baseball history. So, and he was, you know, he was a center fielder for them, Darren, and he was 14-17 in stolen bases. How fast is he? How hard does he throw in high school? He was pretty consistent between 87 and 91 with his fastball, with the potential, you'd think, to get faster as he gets into college and grows older. Another note is his brother, Casey, who will be a junior on St. Viator's team, third baseman. He has a verbal commitment to Notre Dame, so he will be playing baseball full-time for the Irish in a couple years.
Eric, it's interesting. This morning I was watching the MLB Network's morning show, and they had Princeton's head baseball coach on. I believe Scott Bradley was his name. He used to play in the majors. He was with the Seattle Mariners for some time. He's won seven Ivy League titles with Princeton. And he was talking about some of the difficulties being a college baseball coach nowadays, that a lot of coaches at the higher level of Division I, the teams that are battling for championships, they spend so much time trying to win games that development has kind of gone away a little bit at the higher levels. But the point that really stood out, and I really had not ever researched this, but he pointed out it's very difficult to be a college coach because you're dealing with, and I can't remember the number, I should have wrote it down, but it was somewhere between 11 and 13 scholarships is all you have to work with. Now, in the Ivy League, of course, you don't have any at Princeton. So you have to split up those scholarships. So it makes it really difficult on these teams trying to get them, the elite players, not to go to the draft and come to college. But when you don't have many full scholarships to give out, you got to split all these scholarships up. It makes it very difficult on college coaches.
Well, and if you have somebody like Cole Kmet that walks through the door, you go, wow, I'll take that. Look what just fell into my lap. When I did this story, I interviewed Evan Sharpley about it because Evan played both football and baseball. And I want to share this quote. He said he ended up playing, being recruited by Paul Maneri, who's LSU's coach now, and Tyrone Willingham, but he ended up playing most of his career for Dave Schrag and Charlie Weiss. And he said, I would have loved to have Paul Maneri in my corner for 4 years. Yeah. And Coach Willingham, having been a two-sport athlete himself, had a real good feel for not only the demands of the two sports, but also the demands in the classroom. Not to throw Coach Weiss or Coach Schrag under the bus, but they just didn't have the experience. Honestly, my sophomore year was the most challenging because I was trying to do everything in both sports. If I was going to give advice to Cole, I would say, don't try to do everything. You're going to have to say no to a couple things to one sport or another, especially when you're in season. So, It's difficult. He said his problem was he said yes to everything.
But as a football scholarship guy, you can't say no to anything.
Well,
for
you
football.
Can't. I don't think you can say no to Brian Kelly. I think this is really up to Brian Kelly to work with Mick Aoki. You know, with Torrey Hunter, they were able to do it pretty successfully. But again, Torrey Hunter wasn't a big deal. You know, I mean, he had a much better minor league season than he did any of his college years. I think it's more difficult to be a position player, and that's why I think the bullpen thing kind of works. If Cole can just be in the bullpen and pitch on weekends when they have big series against ACC opponents.
One appearance per weekend.
Yeah, that seems like that'll do it, because Cole has a chance to be Notre Dame's number one tight end. I think if Alize Mack messes around, Cole Kmet is going to blow by him. And
This fall, he could be the starter.
This fall. If he has that kind of talent, Darren, and if so does Alize Mack, but if Alize doesn't get focused, Cole Kmet's going to pass him, and Brock Wright is too.
Well, I agree with your evaluation of Mac. I guess I'm just a little surprised you thought it was going to be Komet over Wright being that guy. That's why I was caught a little off guard.
And just like when we had Brian Kelly in here, we usually have him at the beginning of every season. He takes phone calls from, we were chatting about Cole off the air, and he said, Eric, he is a stud. He is a stud. And they wanted to redshirt, and they didn't want to use him this year, but he was so good in August workouts. And even though he didn't catch many passes, they just felt like they had to have him ready because he's that good. I mean, with Wright and Komet, the lowest either of them were ranked coming out of high school was the number three tight end nationally. One service or another had them one or two, but Cole Komet is an incredible athlete. And what Brian Kelly has to do is figure out how to enhance these two sport athletes, because Lou Holtz was very good at it. You had two tight ends during the Holtz era that got drafted in baseball. Irv Smith and Frank Jacobs both got drafted, and I think Jacobs played some minor league ball. You know, Notre Dame has Troy Pride right now, and he just won the Alex Smith Invitational in the 60 on Saturday. He's got Braden Lindsay coming in, who's going to be a full-time track guy. So you got to be able to make it work on both levels, because he's that talent. And look at Pat Connaughton. Pat Connaughton tweeted about it. He saw it. He goes, welcome to the two-sport fam, to Cole Komet on Saturday. But you can make it work. It certainly worked for Jeff Samardzija, you know, and that's why I remember talking to Jeff Samardzija's dad, and he said Jeff is a much better position player than he is a pitcher. But I think the pitcher thing is easier, because you don't have to have that rhythm and timing with your swing. I do think, you know, that's what they want to eventually do. I think they want to play Cole as a first baseman, not have him play center field like he did in high school. But he's an amazing athlete. I think Mike Mano in my article called him a once-in-a-lifetime player. And even Mick Aoki was talking about just what the – he's just a different kid, and if anybody's going to be able to pull this off, he certainly has the mental makeup to do it. But I'm telling you, Darren, he's in the accelerator lane right now.
Wow.
For tight end. When we talk about like a guy like Tavon Coney that just kind of zoomed into relevance and didn't start the year that way, Cole Komet is that guy on offense.
So from a football perspective, Cole Komet, Brock Wright, Alizé Mack, Nick Wisher.
Correct.
Is Cole Komet the most balanced of the four tight ends when it comes to pass catching and inline blocking?
Correct.
So he could be the heir apparent to Durham Smythe's role. And I'm not comparing their abilities. I'm making a general statement of what he could bring to this team. It could be like what Durham did.
Cole Komet's a better athlete.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I mean, Cole Komet kind of didn't get as much recognition because he played on a terrible high school football team that didn't win much. He would get triple teamed at tight end. He even played some quarterback for that team. You know, he's special. He has a chance to be really good. And we've said that about Alizé Mack and Alizé Jones before him when he was Alizé Jones. But he hasn't had that mental part click in where he's been consistent, and people are going to jump over him. I think the coaching staff is open to those young guys and Nick Wisher jumping over him if he's not ready. And then they have two freshman tight ends coming in too.
Who would have thought that a couple of years ago? But after the bowl game, you know what? It's not out of the realm of possibility.
Yep.
The door is open. All right, we ran out of time to play that Chip Long interview. We'll get to that later in the week. We'll replay that, because we got into the Cole Komet conversation, left-handed pitcher. And as Eric mentioned, maybe, who knows, if things go right, in his favor, could be the starting tight end for the Fighting Irish in 2018 at some point, or maybe day one. Who knows?
Well, I think right now it's Mac's job to lose, and he needs to have a really good spring.
Time to go. Time for us to go for a second, too. My five question of the day coming up next. The Sports Beat continues on your home of the Fighting Irish basketball team. It's Miami and Notre Dame tonight at 7 on 96.1 FM, WSBT.
One question, five answers. This is the My Five Question of the Day on Michiana's Sports Leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT.
Who are the five best wide receivers of the Brian Kelly era at Notre Dame? Eric has his list. The first three, probably no surprise, but I think there's a battle for spots four and five. We'll begin with number five.
Yeah, there were a bunch of guys like Torrey Hunter, injuries. Equanimeous didn't play his last year. Stefferson, what can we say about that? Deverus Daniels didn't play his last year. Corey Robinson didn't play his last year. So number five actually is a guy that finished his career as a running back, and it's Theo Riddick. He was really productive as a wide receiver and caught a lot of passes also as a running back, but... you know, when you look at the numbers, Theo's got to be there.
Still doing it for the Detroit Lions. Number four.
Yeah, and once you get past three, there's kind of a pool of a lot of guys you can get. But this guy was really consistent, had two really good years, and was an outstanding blocker for a little guy, and that's Chris Brown. Now, Chris benefited from playing with Fuller, Will Fuller, but I think Chris... When you look at the numbers, the consistency, and the blocking ability.
Oh, fantastic.
He was tremendous and a tremendous leader.
Five best wide receivers of the Brian Kelly era at Notre Dame. Now we get to the big boys, number three.
Well, T.J. Jones was in Brian Kelly's first recruiting class, was a four-year player, had three really good years, and had a decent freshman year. And he's one of Notre Dame's top 10 in receptions of all time, so T.J. Jones makes number three.
How about number two?
Well, it's hard to make the all-time leading receiver in Notre Dame history number two, but when you think about impact, Michael Floyd was outstanding but didn't elevate, I think, his team. I'm sure that Tommy Rees and Dane Crist were happy that Michael was on the team then, and maybe with a different quarterback. I mean, he had huge numbers, but... Michael Floyd, number two, because he could have been more. At least he got himself out of trouble and finished strong at Notre Dame before he got in trouble again.
The five best wide receivers of the Brian Kelly era at Notre Dame: Riddick, Brown, T.J. Jones, Floyd, and number one.
Yeah, had he stayed for all 4 years, Will Fuller would have broken Michael Floyd's records. As it was, he's still in the top 10 all-time in receptions, has a bunch of records in terms of touchdown catches, and that's the thing. He got in the end zone a lot, and he could run by people. He was a big play receiver, and he elevated that 2015 team to a 10-win team. Without Will Fuller, that team is kind of close to 500, I think.
That is today's My Five Question of the Day from 96.1 FM WSBT. We have a little bit of interesting news on Bonzi Colson I see on Twitter. Just little, don't get overly excited, but it's a little tidbit we'll pass along after the break on WSBT.
Here's Eric Hansen with what's coming up in tomorrow's South Bend Tribune Sports Section.
Well, Tom Noy will have all the drama from the Miami and Notre Dame men's basketball game, including Bonzi Colson warming up. Did I blow that for you? Well, we'll see. We have the late score from Purdue-Penn State game, close one there. I have a football notebook kind of looking at the Notre Dame defense and all the evolutions on a team that returns 10 starters and much, much more. Okay, Darren, now you can break the news.
That's all right. Tom Noy just tweeted out a few moments ago, Irish junior Rex Pfluger, usually one of the first ones to shoot around and get loose. No sign of him yet, which tends to lean toward him not being able to play tonight with a back injury. And Alan Wasluski, the SID for Notre Dame basketball, tweets out, show up early for Bonzi Colson in warmups today. Another step on his way back, still targeting Pitt as his return game. So is warmups where they just shoot around, or is it the actual warmups where they do layup drills and passing drills? To be determined. If you're at the game, you'll find out.
Sounds great.
Another step closer for Bonzi returning.
Sorry, I blew that for you.
Top of the hour, WSBT South Bend.
Michiana's sports leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT presents Budweiser's weekday sports beat.
Booger, up and in! With 2 seconds left, Notre Dame leads!
Malpas again, backhands, he scores!
Down to the corner, Jablonski, three is good!
Andrew steps in, he's going to throw deep for T.Y., he's got it!
Flips to Jenkins, three for the win, it's good! Villanova wins it!
He tied, it is a touchdown! New England wins!
Adios! Cubs win their number!
your hosts, Darren Pritchett and Sean Stiers.
We only have 34 minutes left in this installment of Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat, brought to you by Budweiser. Great times are waiting. Grab some Buds. Along with Sean Stiers, I'm Darren Pritchett. Irish basketball, pregame at 6:40. Notre Dame and Miami begins at 7 o'clock. And let me just repeat a couple of things from the end of last hour that are worth noting surrounding the Irish basketball team. Alan Walsluski from Notre Dame Basketball, their SID, tweeted out, "Show up early for Bonzi Colson in warm-ups today. Another step on his way back, still targeting Pitt as his return game." So I would assume that's when they run out on the floor. The clock's like inside of 20 minutes, and he'll go through actual game warm-ups rather than just shooting around
right
before the game, I'm assuming. So
kinda
that's
like,
interesting.
Kind of like Steph Curry, you know, everybody shows up to see Steph Curry do warm-ups. So now you show up to see Bonzi Colson do warm-ups. But hey, maybe he's a little bit more than a week away. That'd be great.
Giancarlo Stanton, home run derby and batting practice.
There you go.
Show up for that. So now we're showing up to see Bonzi shoot. And again, last week before the BC game in that media session, he was shooting, looked good. And I just recall him coming down the stairs at the pit to get to the basketball floor.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he kind of zoomed down the steps. There was no cautious steps. He was briskly going down the steps, so that's an awfully good sign. He probably shouldn't do
that. I was going to say, if that was me, even if I felt good, I think I would be taking my time going down the steps. But
definitely.
To be 21, 22, whatever, again, without a care in the world.
No question. Our pal Tom Noy from the South Bend Tribune, a regular contributor on Sports Beat, tweeted out a couple of hours ago there was a chance that Rex Pfluger would not play, a game-time decision with a bruise on his back from the BC game, and Tom has updated that story about 20 minutes ago. He tweets out, "Irish junior Rex Pfluger is usually always one of the first ones out to shoot around and get loose. No sign of him yet, which tends to lean toward him not being able to go tonight with the back injury." So, more injury drama with this team. Just when you thought they had their starting five ready to roll. And we now get a picture of Bonzi Colson a couple of moments ago stretching on the floor. He's got his basketball uniform on. He's got that warm-up with the hood. He's got the hood on.
Yeah.
Which is now the new thing for some reason.
Farrell likes the hood, so it just stands to reason that Bonzi likes the hood.
I'm still stuck in the time where I'm thinking of Hoosiers. That's what you wear. Uh-huh. I just never imagined we'd be wearing hoods for basketball warm-ups.
Yeah, no kidding.
I hope that doesn't come to hockey. That's when I just say, good night, everybody. I'm done. I'm all done. But there's a picture on Twitter of Bonzi with one of those rubber bands around his right foot and using his hands to
stretch
out
and stuff. Mm-hmm. Okay.
So there is a Bonzi Colson sighting. And he's got his basketball uniform. He's got that warm-up on with the hood on. And he's out on the floor right now. And I'm assuming he's going to take some shots. So maybe he'll do the actual warm-ups before the game.
Sounds good.
At around 6:40, right in there somewhere. So we are inching toward a return of Bonzi Colson. But now there may not be a Rex Pfluger tonight. So how does that affect your thinking for tonight's game?
No word on DJ Harvey in the meantime, I take it then, huh?
I would assume he's out.
Yeah,
no one.
I would assume so. But I was just sitting here thinking, who goes into the starting lineup? Jogo had a pretty good game the other day. I don't know. I really don't know that there's a perfect answer of who they have left when you're talking about going into the starting lineup. So
does this concern you with Rex being out? I remember last week in the 5 o'clock hour, we had a caller that was hoping Rex would be taken out of the starting lineup because of his offensive game. And Eric and I both said, you just lose too much in other areas if he does not start. Now, if you had better players to start, well, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And he'd be a great sixth man, but that's not where we stand right now. He's got to be in the starting lineup for this team when healthy.
It's always a thing. It's just like when you're talking about all-star teams or all-conference and all that, and people complain that, well, this guy should have made it. Well, if that guy makes it, who are you going to take out? And it's like with Pfluger. Okay, if you're going to take him out, who are you going to put in? There just isn't a perfect answer right now. It'd be one thing if they did have Bonzi or Harvey, and those guys were options, but they're not. And Yet Pfluger, his prowess at the offensive end, it hasn't been there consistently at all this year. Even against BC the other day, he made that first three. Then all of a sudden, it's like, okay, now I'm going to put a couple more of it. Come on. But the defensive end is where he does so much, and where he runs down balls, and where he pulls down and just scraps for rebounds and does other things like that. That's where Rex Pfluger really makes his mark with this team. When you think about last year, Vastoria did a lot of those things. This year, Pfluger has picked a lot of that up.
And we can now update. Tim Priester from Irish Illustrated has tweeted out, Rex Pfluger in street clothes. He will not play for Notre Dame basketball tonight against Miami. So Pfluger, a no-go with apparently a bruise to the lower back suffered in the Boston College game. So once again, Mike Bray will shuffle his starting lineup. You would have to assume it's either going to be Jogo or Torres.
Would have to think so.
And maybe,
I guess maybe you lean toward Torres because he's a senior, and I don't know.
Jogo coming off a good performance against BC, do you reward him? Now, the last time he started, didn't get a whole lot. There's not a perfect answer, as you said.
No, and what still makes me wonder what we're going to see the most is just like Saturday, I realized that Torres, Burns, and Jogo, because of the fact that you only have 8 players right now, and now it's back down to 7 again with Pfluger out, because of the fact that you have them, those guys need to get in there, despite the fact that they're still only averaging a combined 6.5 points a game. But Mike Bray kind of went with a hockey line at one point, and you've got all 3 of them on the floor at the same time. Now, there are some nice things that all of them can do, but when you have the 3 of them on the floor at the same time, and again, they're averaging a combined 6.5 points a game, it's a good thing that Matt Farrell hit for 37. That's all I can say about that combination. Mm-hmm.
Unbelievable performance. Hit his first 9 threes, 10 of 12 from the three-point line, 12 of 17 for 37 points. And what I tweeted out during the game, as he was ripping the nets, didn't force a shot, and was still getting other teammates involved, had 7 assists to go along with 37 points, and he starts the second half with the whole world knowing he's hotter than a firecracker. He doesn't force it. He hands out a handful of assists early on in the second half, showing that he was not going to just put the team on his back and take bad shots and try to carry them. He did what he was supposed to do. He scored when he was given the opportunity, and he dished when nothing else was there. What a beautiful performance by Matt Farrell. Again, I said this last hour, but over the last few years, from an individual standpoint, one of the more beautiful games played by a Notre Dame basketball player.
Yeah, it really was. And it was kind of a matter of, that's the shot that was there, and so he took those shots. And BC was kind of setting up its defense early on to take away some other things like Gebben and Mooney and even Gibbs sometimes, and probably part of it was because of the fact that Farrell was 1 for 12 in their most recent game prior to that against North Carolina, 1 for 12 on three-pointers. And then it helps when Gibbs and Pfluger hit those early threes because, again, then BC is sort of focusing on that. They hit their threes before Farrell ever hit one of his threes. And then after he hit, I think, about 4 of them, he kind of started testing it a little bit. He's like, man, I'm starting to feel it right now. And so he puts it up. And again, like you said, he wasn't necessarily forcing it, but he would just extend it. It's like, all right, I'm on fire. I'm going to put this thing up. And they just kept going and going. And then once he starts making them, I mean, there's no reason not to keep putting them up. And you use the word put the team on your back, and I mean, he did that to an extent. And I think it's kind of a case of the team could really use a performance like that because of all they've gone through when they didn't have that guy, when not everyone is having their best day. And not that they didn't have a good day the other day, but just someone to go out there, and he really, when you score 37 points like that, BC tried to make a couple of little moves, and they got a little bit closer in the second half, but it was never really a game at all.
And rarely do you watch an opponent score 29 points, and it's a 40% improvement over the last time you played
yeah,
him.
That's right.
James Robinson, 46 at Purcell Pavilion, 29 against the Irish in Chestnut Hill. So Notre Dame is 6-8. 9-9 is the magic number. You got wins coming up, probably against Wake Forest and Pittsburgh. There's 8. So we're kind of back on track. Remember a couple of weeks ago, we were trying to figure out the road to 9-9.
Mm-hmm.
Virginia Tech losing that game set us back a game. They got it back by beating Boston College.
Right.
So really, they're right back on track where we thought they would be. And we had wins over Miami, Wake Forest, and Pittsburgh. So if all goes well, there's how you get to 9-9. Doesn't matter what happens against Virginia, you're sitting at 9-9. Again, the one thing you worry about is the number of wins over teams with winning records this year. But at this point, get to 9-9, get Bonzi back. He looks good. That might be enough to get you over the hump, unless you lose the first game of the ACC tournament. Then all of a sudden, you put yourself in danger. But win one, two seems to be just what the doctor ordered at the ACC tournament.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And that's obviously, if you do get knocked off in that first game at the ACC tournament, then you are, I think you're pretty much resigned to the fact that you're going to the NIT, and there's really not too many ways around that. But if you take care of business, you win at least two. That gets you to the quarterfinals right there, especially if you got Bonzi back, you're playing well, then that starts to make the committee look deeper and harder, and I think you've got a really good shot at getting in at that point, especially once you get to the quarterfinals. As long as that game, even if you lose that game, it's very competitive because you're playing a higher seeded team, and that really from that point forward, whether it's quarterfinals, semifinals, or even to the championship, you play a competitive game with Bonzi Colson. He's playing well. Even if you lose, then I think you've definitely got a shot at getting a bid in there.
Miami's in a must-win mode, too, tonight. They've lost 3 in a row. They're now 7-7, as they have lost 3 in a row at Boston College, Virginia, and home Saturday to Syracuse, 62-55. So the Hurricanes, they are desperate for a victory tonight as they try to make the NCAA tournament. Notre Dame and Miami, 7 o'clock tip here on WSBT Radio pregame coverage at 6:40. It is 19 minutes after 6 o'clock. Sean and Darren with you. Again, Rex Pfluger out, according to Tim Priester from Irish Illustrated, in street clothes, as Tom Noy reported earlier today from IndyInsider.com and the South Bend Tribune, that Pfluger injured his back in the BC game and was a game-time decision. And it looks like the game-time decision is no-go for Pfluger, which means Jogo could play a little more for the Fighting Irish tonight. We'll step aside. Rapid fire comes your way next on your home of the Fighting Irish, 96.1 FM, WSBT. The puck just didn't go in the net. So I think there is a difference in the three-game losing streak. The first two losses, I think there was a lot of lack of intensity and effort in doing the little things. I think they got back to more of their game at times on Sunday, but they still are going to have to be a whole lot better. So if I see lack of intensity this weekend, then I will throw up the red flag and be very concerned, because be careful, because you have an off week next week, being the number one seed in the Big Ten tournament, and it's just not easy to flip the switch.
Tough to keep the intensity up.
Better see it this weekend.
And I just looking at it again from the outside, because they swept all their Big Ten series their first time through the schedule, and now they've seen splits, and then this one they got swept by Michigan. So I just wonder the familiarity, the coaching, it just a combination of a lot of things that maybe goes into what they've gone through over the second time through the schedule.
Losing at the United Center to Wisconsin 5-0 is disappointing, because Wisconsin's not a tournament team. Michigan is a tournament team. The last month and a half, they have started to get goaltending. They have a really solid nucleus offensively. They can be broke down defensively. We just didn't get it done. So getting swept by Michigan, that doesn't alarm me. The loss to Wisconsin was disappointing. Penn State has struggled. We had a win and a tie there. So all things considered, I'm not panicking over the loss to Michigan, because they have played really good hockey lately, much better than we saw a couple of months ago.
All right, we're going to have to wind down here pretty soon. So we've got a little audio. Everyone's talking about Fergie doing the national anthem at the NBA All-Star game last night. So here's part of that.
Whose bright stripes and bright stars through the perilous fight
it is, as noted, pretty much everywhere, not the best sounding rendition of the national anthem. So, what do you think?
The one part, let me just find the, I'm going to fast forward here a little bit.
Okay.
Let me see if I can find the part I'm going to talk about. Right there, that sounds like Marilyn Monroe singing to some guy. Remember the voice?
The Kennedy, when she was
doing... Yes, that's what it is.
What was that? Happy birthday.
It was happy birthday. President. Thank you for filling
Kennedy.
In the blank.
Yeah.
That's what it sounded like.
Or Mr. President, yeah.
Now, she has mentioned today, quote, "I'm a risk taker artistically, but clearly this rendition didn't strike the intended tone," end quote.
Here's my problem. And you and I, neither one of us are singers, but being in the business we're in, we get to hear the national anthem played and sung about as much as anybody because we're at ballparks and the whole thing. My thing is, my thought on it is, if you're going to sing the national anthem, it's about the anthem. It's not about you as the singer. She talked about risk taking. You don't take risks during the national anthem. It's not like she was off key or anything, and she hit some really good notes in that thing. It's not about you. It's about the anthem. Just sing the national anthem. That's what you're there to do. She tried to play a game, and she got beaten badly, I think, playing that game.
Prime example, one of the most beautiful voices you will ever hear in any era is Pink.
Mm-hmm.
And she was sick at the Super Bowl.
Right.
And still a beautiful
Nailed
rendition.
It.
She didn't mess around with it. She just sang the song the way it was meant to be.
Right.
Her talents came out. It was beautiful. I did not watch any of the NBA All-Star game. I don't watch the NBA, so I didn't really know about this until this morning when I noticed on Twitter people were talking about Fergie, and I didn't know why we were talking about Fergie.
Right.
But I can see why people were a little taken back. That was not the best choice.
No. She definitely tried to put her own spin on it. And again, not something that I think that you should do during the national anthem. Just sing it because, again, I thought she hit some great notes in there, but it was these little runs that she tried to put in there. Just sing the anthem. Hit the notes. Sing Agreed. It straight through. And the Pink is a great comparison because
fantastic.
She was sick, wasn't feeling well, but she just sang it straight out, and she hit it perfectly.
Without a doubt.
All right.
Very good.
That's all I have. And I've been sitting here watching the Notre Dame official stat page waiting for the starting lineup to be posted, and I still have not seen it. Have you seen anything from the arena?
Mm-mm.
So we still don't know who the fifth starter is going to be Mm-mm. tonight for the Irish.
I will say this. I'm glad I decided to follow the Indy whiteboard Twitter account. You know, they have that dry erase board over
the
student section?
Right.
Well, the whiteboard has its own Twitter account. There's not many followers. I decided to follow, and they were the ones that took the picture of Bonzi Colson warming up on the floor. So
very nice.
It pays off to follow
to
the
follow
Indy
that whiteboard.
I highly recommend. They always have some fun things on that board during the game. All right, so no Rex Pfluger tonight. He is out with a back injury that was suffered Saturday at Boston College. As Sean just mentioned, we do not know who the fifth starter is going to be. That should be announced very, very soon. But the Irish will have a different lineup once again. It is their ninth different starting lineup in the ACC, according to Tom Noy.
Man.
It just does not end for this team. But the good news is Bonzi Colson going through warm-ups tonight, inching closer to that return at home against Pittsburgh. Budweiser's weekday sports beat brought to you by Budweiser. Great times are waiting. Grab some Buds. J.D. Martinez has signed with the Boston Red Sox, reportedly 5 years, $110 million. So with Martinez leaving Arizona, they have signed speedster Jared Dyson to a two-year deal to help that Diamondback lineup. He's not going to provide much pop, but speedy guy at the top of the lineup.
Yep.
Talk to you tomorrow.
Sounds good.
Irish fans, Notre Dame basketball is coming up next on Michiana Sports Leader, 96.1 FM WSBT. Your time is 6:37.